Okay, well, thank you, Antoine. It's been really fun. I've been here for a while. I'm here all day today, not leaving till the evening, so hope to have more discussions with all of you. So this last lecture is on a slightly different model, a class of models that I'm calling Yukawa SYK models, which have been studied by a number of people over the last 4 or 5 years. And these turn out to have a rather interesting and useful relationship to other theories that were studied in condensed matter, especially on quantum phase transitions of metals in two dimensions. So, you know, we've heard a lot from Antoine and also a bit from me about how if you take strong interactions near some kind of mod insulator, you can get interesting correlated states and in some high-dimensional models, also strange metal behavior. But when you go to low dimension, there's, you know, one ingredient I think is missing from that whole perspective. I mean, those are all important ingredients for a complete theory, no doubt. And that's the idea that there could be some sort of collective mode, that there could be an emergent boson. This could be an autoparameter near a phase transition, or it could be a gauge field, or it could be some kind of parton degree of freedom. So there could be some important collective mode. And that plays a role. It plays a significant role in real materials, especially in two dimensions. So that's the problem we want to consider. And in the context of SYK models, you can imagine doing that in a model of this type, which if you were here last week, Jörg Schmalien gave a very nice talk talking about some of the properties of such models. So these are models. So in the SYK model, you can say it's a model of fermions with only interactions. And in fact, you take them to be random interactions. So here we introduce a boson. In this case, we call it phi. And the boson and the fermion themselves have either trivial or no dynamics at all. And there's a coupling. And all of the interesting stuff comes when this coupling dominates. So in these models also, you can define an SYK limit, where you take this Yukawa coupling to be a random function of its indices. And then you get the Seidel bond equations in a very similar way. In the SYK model, you had sigma was G cubed. But now you get sigma as some product. Excuse me, that should be a GB, sorry. Some product of the Green's functions of the fermions and bosons. And so there's been a large number of papers that have studied these models. And you can now, you know, try to make these models realistic. Put in some spatial structure while keeping additional indices, even put in dispersions. And that's been a very active field of study, especially in the last couple of years. And it seems like, you know, a lot can be done. And many older problems can be well understood. And maybe even some new insights can be gained. So that's what I want to show you today. So let's actually give you a specific example to begin with, where you have to really consider this kind of Yukawa theory of a fermions coupled to bosons. So this is imagine you have some system which the Fermi surface has square symmetry, and as you vary some coupling, lambda, it likes to go from square symmetry to rectangular symmetry. So this is a phase transition from orthorhombic to tetragonal to orthorhombic state, driven electronically. And there's two possible states in the orthorhombic configuration. And so let's introduce an Ising order parameter phi to describe this phase transition. So if you draw a phase diagram at finite temperature, then there'd be this ordered phase, the nematic ordered phase here, and everywhere else is square symmetry. This is an actual phase transition. It's a structural phase transition. We are choosing between the two possible orientations. So if you were in two dimensions, this phase transition would just be given by the two-dimensional Ising model, and you would just write down an Ising model for the order parameter phi. So our interest here is in this critical point, the quantum critical point. And the first guess would be this was just a Ising model in one space, two space and one time dimensions. So like the 3D Ising model. But that turns out to be incorrect because there's a Fermi surface. There are additional excitations which actually totally modify the nature of this critical point. And as I'll review, what we a lot of evidence that you get a strongly coupled non-Fermi liquid with no quasi-particles. So a whole long-standing hope has been that once we understand this non-Fermi liquid and then really work really hard, we'll start to understand experiments, especially experiments on transport. So in particular, is this a strange metal up here in this quantum critical region of this critical point for this theory, as I've described you? And it's been clear for a while, but now it's become really, I think, quite clear. The answer is no. This theory, it's an interesting non-Fermi liquid, that's certainly correct, but it's not a strange metal in the sense that transport is actually not anomalous and doesn't have any strange power law in temperature down to very low temperatures. And that is something that's been claimed numerous times. I'm not going to make a list of all the papers that have made this claim. But the answer today is very clear, that's a wrong claim. And I'm going to propose that what's really needed is to put in some disorder to get a strange metal. And in particular, what's most important is the disorder not of the fermion scattering of the, some potential, but the induced disorder in the interactions or on the Yukawa couplings. And that turns out to be the key ingredient, I believe, that's going to give you the yes answer, as I hope to convince you today. All right, so what is the low energy theory of this look like, and why is it not just an Ising phase transition? So imagine you have some order parameter fluctuation of phi at some wave vector q. So this fluctuation is going to create a particle-hole pair, and that's going to Landau damp it. And that happens most efficiently at these two points, K0 and these two antipodal points, where the fermion excitation at momentum q, the particle-hole excitation momentum q, has essentially zero energy because you're tangent to the Fermi surface. So you just focus on the vicinity of these two points. You expand it out, so you get something that's quadratically dispersing in the y direction and linearly dispersing in the x direction. And then you couple these two anisotropic fermions with this relation, with this dispersion here with the Yukawa coupling, psi dagger psi and psi dagger. They couple in the same way for the Ising order parameter. And this is some energy cost for the fluctuation of q of this order parameter along y. You can also put it in term along the x, but it's easy to see it's not important. All right, so this would be the low energy theory you write down. You know, it's the kind of theory that particle physicists work with at least superficially. They call it the Gross-Nouveau model or something like a Gross-Nouveau-Yukawa model. The big difference is that these are not Dirac fermions. These are strange isotropic anisotropic fermions with this dispersion that you get near any Fermi surface. Okay, so that's the low energy theory, and then you can study it. But before I study it, let me give you another example where you get almost the same low energy theory. So imagine you have some system where you have some fermions, these obviously are not electrons now, which have an emergent gauge charge. And so they're coupled to some U1 gauge field, and this is going to lead to some non-Fermi liquid behavior on the Fermi surface. So the most famous example of this would be the half-field Landau level, where you have a Fermi surface in the theory of Halperin, Lee, and Reed. So again, you can try to look at how does this Fermi surface couple to the gauge field. And when you sit down and do the theory, the reasoning is exactly the same. You only need to worry about fluctuations which are tangent to the Fermi surface. And since you're looking at transverse gauge fluctuation in a Landau gauge, you can just make the gauge field have a single component A along the x direction. And so you just end up with a single scalar field again, and a low energy theory which looks exactly the same. except this sign is different. This is a minus sign here between the two points rather than a plus sign. So that was the plus sign for the pneumatic order and a minus sign for the gauge field. All right, so there it is. That's a well-studied theory, as you can imagine, starting from the late 90s. So we would like to figure out what goes on in this theory. Okay. All right, so you can, so I'm not going to summarize all the work. There's a nice review article by Sung-Sik Lee that you can look at what's been studied. But if you just do some relatively simple computations, you can understand what's going on. So if you compute the boson self-energy, that's the fermion bubbles, you get the usual Landau damping correction. And if the boson is right at the quantum critical point, or if it's a gauge field, it's always true, you get this kind of propagator. And you can see from this propagator that omega is scaling as Q cubed, and this is the Landau overdamped boson. Then you just compute the self-energy of the fermion in the presence of the overdamped boson, and you get this famous result of omega to the 2/3, first obtained by Patrick Lee, I think. And so then the final Green's function has basically a momentum-independent self-energy. There is some weak momentum dependence depending on which point in the Fermi surface you are, but that's not that important. So it's not that different from the kind of models that Antoine was just discussing. Some dispersion of some quasi-particles and a very singular Fermi energy with exponent 2/3. Okay. All right. So that result, I believe, is generally correct. There's even some numerical evidence for it, I think, now. But really, what we want to understand is this what we're seeing in experiments, say in the cuprates or something. So one of the technical issues has been, for a long time, is that this result, although generally people believe it, is not systematic in any parameter. If you try to do 1/n expansion, you take n fermion flavors for various reasons, that just fails. And so that's also been an open problem. Okay, so one of the things we realized that you can at least fix that problem. What did I do? Oh, before I get there. So I'm not doing anything on the board. This computation, it's in various places, including various review articles I've written, how do you get this 2/3? But there's a simple way to see it, just by a scaling argument in this low energy theory I wrote down. So imagine you just rescale space and time, and you want to preserve this dispersion of x having one derivative and y having two derivatives, you have to scale them anisotropically. And for now, let's just imagine tau is scaled with some exponent z, which is unknown. Then you rescale everything in here and see what happens. So what you find is that, in this analysis here, if I look at this fermion Green's function, this self-energy we anticipate is more singular than this omega. So this omega term is not important. And so you imagine that you want this thing to scale away to zero. Oops. You want those terms to scale away to zero. And that's exactly what happens in the SYK model. SYK model, you get a square root of omega self-energy, and the bare term doesn't matter. So you scale those away, but then you haven't fixed Z. So how do you fix Z? Well, you look at the scaling of the coupling, G, and you find that G scales this way. And so now if you're flowing to some fixed point, you want G to be, the system to be have some emergent scale invariance, G should be invariant. The coupling should not flow, and that happens exactly at Z equals 3/2. So that's a very quick way to see where that 3/2 comes from. Okay. All right, so now to return to the issue of the large N expansion. So this turns out to be a very simple way to do the large N expansion, a controlled way of getting these results, and also in principle then looking at corrections, which is what we started out to do, and that's turned out to be a very useful exercise. What you do is you give these fermions and the bosons some flavor, for simplicity, both of them going from 1 through N, and then you make your Yukawa coupling of a function of all three flavor indices. All right. So So now what we're going to do is we're going to take this coupling in the SYK spirit to be just a random function of its indices, okay? And the idea here is that, we expect, and we see this from the perturbation theory and various RG analysis, that ultimately it's going to flow to this fixed point theory. And that fixed point theory has certain universal properties which are independent of where you started with. So which couplings you chose maybe is not that important in the long time limit. Okay, so even the SYK model gives an example of where such things are true. So if it's not that important, you may as well just average over these couplings. Notice the couplings don't depend on space, so this is not spatial disorder. The problem still has full translational symmetry, and all the original symmetries of the original model are fully preserved. Except you just take an ensemble of microscopic theories with an ensemble of microscopic couplings and just average over them. And when you do this, you find you get a very systematic large N expansion. You can get the theory as a saddle point of an action. This is like the G sigma action that I talked about a couple of lectures ago. And when you take the saddle point of this, you get these equations. These are very much like the SYK equations, except now there's some momentum indices to keep track of, and there's Green's function of both the fermions and the bosons. So these are, Migdal-Eliasberg type equations, and these are the exact equations of this theory in the large N limit. And these have to be solved fully self-consistently. So that's something that actually Ilya did numerically. We looked at this very carefully on a lattice and just solved it. And indeed, we confirm that the simple RPA result of Patrick Lee does work out. It's completely self-consistent. You get exactly 2/3 here. And so everything is in great shape. And now we even have this theory as the saddle point of a large N expansion, which shows up. Well, then that shows you what kind of corrections you may have, and there's a lot of discussion in this paper on those, but I won't go into that here today. There have been various claims and so on over the years. Polchinski, in fact, first claimed this, putting N flavors of fermion would do it, and then Zugstickly pointed out that wasn't right. There have been some other claims, but they also have some other strange features where you put factors of N in length scales, which is completely, that's not allowed, that's cheating. That relate to unphysical behavior. You don't want your frequency scale to depend on N. So as far as I know, this is really the only way to do it. There are analytical arguments on why the 2/3 doesn't change in the large N limit. Yeah, we checked it numerically too, but there are certain asymptotic arguments you can make why the putting in fully renormalized Green's functions here and over here doesn't change the result you get where you put in bare Green's functions. You can get the answer just by putting bare Green's functions everywhere, amazingly. But when you put in fully renormalized, it doesn't change anything. Those are, again, there are various lecture notes I've written, and that goes into detail on those arguments. And the reason I'm not going into it, because this is not going to be the right theory. Okay, but at least we understand this theory well, and we also have some understanding of what are corrections to it. There are corrections at order 1 over n. They're really hard to compute, but at least we can draw some pictures of various complicated diagrams that hopefully someday will be computed. But what enables all of that is having, this is an exact representation of the problem at any n, and then now we can have a saddle point and do the expansion in powers of 1 over n. Okay, all right, so now I want to go on and add randomness. So why do I want to add randomness? The first thing you can do in this model, so I'm still considering the old model, again, subject of thousands of papers, computer conductivity. So immediately you run into some, ambiguities. If you don't have a large N expansion, you don't know which graphs to sum. But I think there's general arguments that you should sum, you include the self-energy in the fermion bubble, you should include the vertex correction, And these are the Aslamazov-Larkin diagram, these are the Markey-Thompson diagram, and this is what you should sum to all order. This is what you should do. And indeed, in the large N expansion, that is exactly what it instructs you to do. You don't have to be very smart, you just do the large N expansion. You look at the flux, in the G sigma theory, you look at the fluctuation, the response to an external gauge field, and it just pops out. This is very similar to the Schwarzschild calculation, where you also get sum of similar diagrams. Here, there's spatial structure and so on. Okay, so this was actually, these diagrams were evaluated by Yongbek Kim et al. In a famous paper in the context of the Highfield-Landau level. Not in this particular paper, but earlier papers, several people said, well, these diagrams, when you compute them, gives you a resistivity, which is T to the 4/3. So that's, you know, almost linear, that's hope. And an optical conductivity, which is omega to the minus 2/3. I think today it's clear that both results are wrong. The fact that resistivity is 2/3 is relatively easy to see, that it's not correct. That in fact, the DC conductivity is actually infinite in this theory. And this was something I realized after all my, you know, my involvement with my holographic friends. From that context, it was totally obvious that the resistivity is zero in this theory. And why is that? Well, it's the answer is that drag is extremely strong. So in the electron phonon problem, you may be familiar with the idea of phonon drag, which has recently been measured after some amazing experiments in really pure crystals. So the idea there is an electron scatters off phonons and it donates its momentum to the photon, looking at a very low temperature, so everything is acoustic phonons. And those acoustic phonons will eventually give their momentum back to the electrons. And in fact, the whole system in a perfectly pure crystal would have zero resistance. This is something pointed out by Pyrrhus in 1935, right after Bloch wrote his famous paper just computing resistivity of electron phonon scattering and coming up the famous Bloch's law of T to the 5th. And Pyrrhus wrote this paper saying, this is wrong. However, experiments proved Bloch to be correct, and maybe that's why Pyrrhus's paper was forgotten. So why was Pyrrhus not experimentally correct, even though theoretically he was completely right? The reason is no crystal is perfect. An electron phonon scattering is very weak. So when an electron scatters off a phonon, that phonon will eventually hit a defect before it ever scatters off another electron. So you can forget about this drag effect in most situations. But the point here is that you're really in the infinite drag limit. Here there is the electron boson scattering is so strong that the electron even ceases to exist. The phonon also essentially ceases to exist. The electrons and phonons are so strongly coupled that you can't, it doesn't make sense, electrons and bosons here are so strongly coupled, doesn't make sense to ask who carries the momentum. It's really carried by both together. So you really have to work in the strong drag limit, even in an impure crystal. And that will tell you that in the absence of impurities, your resistance is zero. Actually, this effect is even stronger than we initially thought. If you look at the optical conductivity, the omega to the minus 2/3, that's also not correct. This was something that Haiyu Guo figured out while we were doing this large N expansion, and also was stated in this paper by the group at MIT, using some other much more sophisticated arguments. But in the end, basically, the conductivity is just due to like there's some very weak resistance in this theory, and there's no interesting optical conductivity either. Okay, so that's, you know, that could be the end of the story on Fermi surfaces coupled to critical bosons. I think Senthil and his group have been following a slightly different route now. They're saying, well, but there's one very special boson for which this is not true. Okay, well, that's an interesting idea, but We think the phenomenon of strange metal is so ubiquitous and so common that you need some generic explanation, not pick a very special order parameter that might apply in one case. Okay, so we said, well, let's add some actual disorder. All right, so the first thing you would think of adding to this theory is just some random potential scattering, Vij, just like you're doing the theory of disordered metals. And so let's add that. And actually, people have done that earlier. I'll just summarize the results. So this is, this is what you do in the theory of disordered metals, and it's totally crucial to everything. So maybe it's important here also, near the quantum critical point. So you add this, and then what do you get? Just do the same large N expansion and look at the structure of this theory. So now the boson self-energy, instead of being omega over Q, becomes omega, just mod omega. That's the Landau damping in a disordered metal. So there's some quasi-particle lifetime from elastic scattering. And so the boson propagator now is Q squared plus mod omega. It has this diffusive form. All right, so now you take this D propagator and put it in the fermion self-energy. This is exactly what you did for the pure problem, just changing the D propagator here. And what you get is this marginal Fermi liquid correction. This is just the impurity scattering term, the usual lifetime of an electron in a random potential. Okay, so this, I think it's mentioned briefly in the Halperin and Lee-Reed paper, so this has been known also for a while. All right, so that's exciting. You've got a marginal Fermi liquid self-energy for which there's some evidence in experiments. And also the thermodynamics will give you a T-log T-specific heat, so maybe this is all you need. All right, there's just one problem. Unlike the claim in the famous paper of Verma et al., this fermion self-energy does not imply an optical conductivity, which is 1 over omega. So you can try and now compute the same set of graphs. And the kind of cancellation that happened in the pure system also happens here, because you're still talking about the inelastic scattering is still very long wavelength. And therefore, you find that even though there's a marginal Fermi liquid self-energy, there's nothing in the transport. So if you just compute those graphs, you get just Fermi liquid-like T-squared corrections with some residual resistivity, which is given by the impurity scattering potential squared. Okay, I think I'm moving pretty fast. Okay, all right. So that also doesn't work. This was some, I thought last year that maybe this will work when you do the full thing self-consistently. I think how you worked pretty hard on it, what you have to do is just compute these graphs very carefully, and you find subtle cancellations between this vertex corrections and the pair graph, and also these are not so important in this case. It's these two graphs here, which I should say, what went wrong with the original calculation of Yongbeck Kim et al., this well-known result. Basically they ignored drag for the DC resistivity, so they didn't actually include the fact that the distribution function of the bosons would change. And for the optical conductivity, they actually found omega to the 2/3 terms from this graph and that graph. And they said, they say no reason those two should cancel, and so there's an omega to the 2/3. But if they'd actually computed the coefficients carefully, they would have found the cancel. Anyway, so you can show this by various methods. Okay, not me anymore. It's my amazing collaborators who can do such things. okay.
So, yeah.
Yes.
So the vertex corrections are still non-trivial.
Absolutely. Even without disorder, that's the case. Yeah. So even without disorder, in fact, especially without disorder, here, the self-energy is local, omega to the 2/3. But the vertices are not trivial, and in fact, they lead to a complete cancellation. And there is no optical conductivity, it's just delta function. if you put in umklapp, but those are, you know, those will give you nothing singular. Anyway, it's nice that two independent groups by two different methods have come to the same conclusion after, well, you know, this is 20 years after the original paper. All right, so just this looks even more hopeless. So, but inspired by the SYK game, we said, all right, well, let's make this coupling G, that's the last coupling left over, also random. So now there's a coupling here, which is non-random in space. That's the original coupling. That was in everybody's theory. But now we imagine this coupling G has some correction, which is a random function of position. And there's many ways this could happen. I mean, it's, you know, your electrons are moving in some random potential. So you want to figure out in the presence of random potential, what is the saddle point Hartree-Fock eigenstates. Similarly for the boson is also moving in a random potential. In fact, those corrections may be even more important. But you want to work out the normal modes of the bosons in the random potential and take the low energy modes in both sectors. And now once you've accounted for the potential disorder in the fermions and the potential disorder in the bosons, you have some new modes in terms of which you express the full theory. And in terms of these new normal modes, this G will be a function of position. It's the kind of thing you do, density functional theory. And imagine doing density functional theory in a random potential, and then looking at corrections to density functional theory, you would end up getting couplings here which are functional position. So you have to have, so this seems to be the key. That's the one message of my talk. You have to take this coupling to be a random functional position. It can be a correction. The main coupling could be uniform, but there has to. This coupling turns out to be just right. Anyway, so you add this extra coupling, and notice here in the correlation, there's a delta function of R. And now you compute. It's the same set of graphs, except the momentum is not conserved at the vertices. So again, you find that the boson self-energy is mod omega. That's the G prime term there. Again, the same as the G term. The G prime term is also mod omega, and the propagator is Q squared plus mod omega, just like it was for just the G term. So just the coefficient gamma has changed a little bit. All right. So and then you compute the fermion self-energy, their contribution from V, G, and G prime. So this is just the elastic scattering. These are the two contributions to the inelastic scattering. And they both have the marginal Fermi liquid form, quite generically in two dimensions. This is really a very simple calculation of the scattering of this boson, done many times before. But now you compute the conductivity. And now actually life is very simple because at these G prime vertices, momentum is not conserved. And therefore, the vertex correction are actually just immediately zero. You can just forget about them. And here, the naive answer, that you would naively relate the self-energy to a conductivity, works. It's correct. So what do you get? Well, the G squared log term, the self-energy, does not contribute to transport, but the fluctuation in the G also gives you a log term, and that does. So it's all coming from the spatial fluctuations in the Yukawa coupling. You can compute the conductivity and you get exactly the form that Antoine has been discussing in comparison to Dirk van der Merwe's experiment. You get an optical conductivity, which is linear in omega, and also linear in temperature, the resistivity is linear in temperature. And an effective mass that has a log dependence on omega. That's exactly what you get. So now the point is that there's a residual resistivity, which is V squared, which is determined by the potential scattering V over here. This thing just keeps going off there. Potential scattering V determines the residual resistivity, but it's the G prime that determines the linear and temperature term in the resistivity, DC resistivity, and also the 1 over omega term, the optical conductivity. So this is at least gives us some hope in understanding another feature of the experiments that's often mentioned. People say, well, you know, you took this strange metal, you did some radiation damage, the residual resistivity went up, but the linear resistivity slope did not. I can't say I can explain that, but at least there's some wiggle room in this theory. There are two different things that determine the residual resistivity and the linear T resistivity. One is the potential scattering of the fermion that determines the residual resistivity, as always. And so at least you can tune them separately. So now, you know, we have to have some microscopic understanding of what's actually going on in the experiments and how does that microscopics lead to different values of V and G prime. So that's what we have to work on. But we haven't done that, but at least there's some hope, is what I'll say. this thing is not dead on alert. Sorry? It absolutely works in exactly the same way. I'm not 100% sure, but I think so. Yeah. Avishkar would know. It is different form, but there is some scaling. It's not your tanh omega over 2t. It's a little more complicated, I think.
What about the asymmetry?
That doesn't work. So that's I would say that negligible. Yeah. So I think this kind of theory gets almost everything right, except I don't understand I cannot understand the high, large spectral asymmetry by this approach. Yeah, so that's, I think, generally missing here. Well, you were just showing experiments where you think it's there. No, I think, you know, I think this is another important ingredient, which has to be combined with the local physics that you were discussing. And exactly how to do that, well, all right, there's something for the next meeting. But I think there is something to both approaches, but the one thing that this approach misses is the large spectral asymmetry, yeah. It's determined by G prime squared, yeah. So I don't have that slide here, but actually you do. I mean, so what it turns out, and you can kind of see this, if you compute the 1 over tau, so it's some number times t, so it turns out that, so the resistivity is given by g prime squared, so roughly speaking it's given by g squared plus g prime squared over here. This gives you the self-energy renormalization, which comes from both, whereas resistivity only comes from g prime. So this would say in a very clean sample where g prime is small, this number should be much smaller than 1. In a relatively dirty sample, it should be close to 1. And in fact, you get a number of order 1 here. Yeah. Pi over 4, so pi over 3, or something like that, yeah, with some logs. But this is the roughly, crudely, the effect. So it's telling you in the cleanest sample, this should be much smaller than 1. But still linear in T. Yes, the theory becomes simpler, but that's not real life. It will affect things like the self-energy. For the resistivity, in fact, that's exactly what we're doing right now. We're just solving these equations numerically completely, putting G equals 0. Because you have an analytical argument that at least the singular terms in G don't matter. It'll renormalize things a bit, but the singularities won't be different. And solving these full equations and resumming all of this with all three terms, that's a tough task. But actually, we're working on it. Ilya's working on it. It's very easy. It's much simpler. It's correct. But you have to get the self-energy fully self-consistently. That takes a little bit of work. But I think Ilya already has the code running. So we'll have those results fairly soon, I think. Yeah. You could take the G prime only theory. Then you'll get linear and T resistance down to zero temperature with rho of 0 equals 0. OK. Right, what else? Yeah, okay, I guess I'm pretty much done. I didn't go through any of the detailed calculations, but they're really not that more, it's just evaluating some graphs and kind of thing you learn in a solid state physics course. I just have to know which graphs to evaluate, and I'm just giving you the results. So to summarize then, you know, we're considering a rather generic model, I think. Your generic model or some Fermi surface coupled to critical boson. And like I said, this boson could be an auto parameter, it could be a gauge field, it could be a parton in some, or what we call a slave boson in some FL star, FL phase transitions. It doesn't much matter. You get same generic theory. The bosons I mentioned so far tend to have fluctuations at long momentum. We've also thought about anti-ferromagnetic order parameters. There, some of the details are different, but the effect of G prime is again extremely important and exactly the same. So the main results seem to go through in just about any theory with some collective bosonic mode and some randomness in the coupling. So, yeah, so that's nice. I mean, I think that's a very appealing feature, at least to me, because the phenomenology also experimentally we know is so robust in so many different systems, there's got to be some simple, at least principle behind all of it, and this seems to be it, I think. So for example, if we just had this term, just to summarize then, and I'll stop, this gives you a non-Fermi liquid with a T to the 2/3 specific heat. This was, I think, in the Halperin and Lee-Reed paper, maybe a bit earlier, and that's correct. But in this case, the pneumatic critical point, for example, or the spin liquid case, the conductivity has not any of the features that really hundreds of papers have claimed. It's just a delta function. Then if you add a random potential, you get some nice things. You get a marginal Fermi liquid self-energy, you get a T log T specific heat, and you get a residual resistivity, but you don't get any interesting optical conductivity, and nor do you get a linear in temperature term. And then when you add the main actor, then you get everything you want, except the particle hole asymmetry. You get marginal Fermi liquid self-energies, T log T specific heat, linear to resistivity, and the optical conductivity that Antoine was describing. Okay, so I guess there's a lot more to be done here, and we are working actively at it. I think the most important thing is to really make a more closer microscopic connection and understand what is the origin of G prime in some more realistic model. Okay, so stay tuned. All right, thank you.